November. The room is double booked on the second Tuesday, so there will be no men's men under normal circumstances. What we will do is we'll go to the pub, Joseph Paxton, not the Thursday after, but the Thursday after that. I think it's about the 17th, is it? Something like that. Somebody got a calendar? No? No? Come on. Well done, Bernard. Yeah. The Thursday. I'll keep on talking whilst Bernard is looking. Right, so it's 17th of November down at the Joseph Paxton. I've got some menus, which are the standard menus they've got. They do a special on a Wednesday, which is two steaks and a bottle of wine, or two steaks and two drinks. And whilst they normally do that on a Wednesday, and we're going on a Thursday, they are going to see if they can do it for us on the Thursday. And there may be other specials as well. So anyway, this is, so we'll go down there. We will need numbers, and we will need to pre-order as much as possible. It makes their life an awful lot easier. Not that we'll walk in and they'll be on the table, but it just means they've got the quantity of stuff in. Otherwise, if you've got all of us going in for steak, and they've used the steak the night before, there'll be none left. So anyway, that's November. December is Curry and Carols, backed by popular demand. Well, at least Liz wanted me to do it, so that was enough. And that's the 17th, Saturday the 17th of December, normal format. There will be curries, but there'll also be probably a sweet and sour chicken or sweet and sour something for those that don't do curries, because there are some people that don't do curries, understandably. December, January is a men's breakfast. It's going back a long, long time now, maybe about eight years, when Nigel and I started. It was men's breakfast, and nobody was turning up, and we were very grateful for that, because we thought we could close it down. As it was, we closed down the breakfast and started this. However, in January, men's breakfast, we've got a copper, a policeman coming, a proper policeman, okay? We'll be talking about at least one of the big cases that he's been involved with just recently, and I think the boys got banged up. So it should be an interesting discussion on that, or sort of chat.
Got banged up for about 6 years
each. There you go. 14 banged up, 6 years each. So it should be an interesting presentation, or more like a chat, I guess, really. And again, it's men's breakfast, so I'll be doing the full English for those that sign up for it. Yeah, and those that don't can go without, but I won't. Okay, I'll be there for my full English. Yeah. I don't get it that often there if I'm going to have one, you know. So January, and it's the 28th, January the 28th. Timings, we'll come back to you later. To look forward, do we have somebody in February identify? Yes, we may have Pete Benton talking about the Prime Minister has initiated some work associated with Brexit, and to do with the breakdown of the people that voted for that and their sort of dissatisfaction, to try and understand, get some numbers so they can start to understand what's behind some of these things. And as you know, Pete works for the Office of National Statistics. I keep on wanting to say this National Survey, but no, it's the... and he's been a couple of times before, and it's been very, very interesting. So he will either talk in February or in April, I think it is. So we're not quite sure of those dates. In March, we're hopeful to get an ex-Royal Australian flying doctor. You know the flying doctor service? Mm-hmm. Yeah, a doctor from that to come and talk. That should be interesting. He did say, can you contact, can we get in touch with Australia during the talk? And I went, I've no idea, but I'm sure I have a man that might be able to help. So anyway, we'll see what will come with that. It's my son. So if you know my son, he's as reliable as the rain and the weather, right? So he may be here in March, but March which year and what part of March, I really don't know. But anyway, hopefully he will be here for that. So I think that is probably about the real notices that we have. The Curry and Carol, we will need help, okay? So there's three parts to it. One is getting the manacles on. Sorry, getting started, getting sorted out in Saturday afternoon. One is helping then with the sort of delivery of the food and sorting out. And then the other one is sort of tidying up at the very end. So I'm normally involved with all three and would like help in some of the others as well. So anyway, we'll talk to you all about that a bit later. So it shouldn't be too onerous. And you may have noticed a subtle difference in the emails you're getting. We're using something called MailChimp. And it means I've completely and totally abdicated all responsibility, basically. I know it works. I know it works very, very well. And we're playing with it at the moment to try and get it sorted out. Alan Renshaw, who's not here this evening, he's on a cruise, is working on that. And what we're hoping is it's something that we can use within the church, not just for mainly for men. But then, you know, once we've got emails, then we can then start. It's then like marketing campaigns. Okay, so you identify the people that you want to email to, and then it sends it off. And monitors whether you've opened it or not. So you people that don't open the emails, we know the numbers, we don't know who's not, but and also it used to be reply to either me or M4M at St. John's and everything else. Now that's all changed. And so the subtleties are, I'm sure I've got a login to MailChimp, but I've no idea how to use it. So I just send the stuff to Alan and things happen. And the other part is reply to, I yet don't have a login to that either. So lots of people have replied. Alan's told me he had 24 replies, I think it was. I have no idea what they were, who they are, what they said. But they're teething problems, okay? So if you've replied and I've not come back to you, I'm very sorry. I have no idea what you said. So as long as it was polite, we're all doing well. But that's what we're working on with that. So hopefully it'll all sort of sort itself out and life then becomes a lot easier for me. Because beforehand, I had to fire my machine up, send out the emails to 50 people, close it down, fire it up again, send it to the next 50, close it down, open it up, and send it to the next 50, because my poor little laptop wasn't coping. Okay, now MailChimp handles that all for me. So that's the technology part that we have. Anyway, Nigel.
Thank you very much, sir. Good evening all, welcome.
You must have said that. Good evening and welcome. It's glory to see you all. I shall not be long because it's my pleasure to introduce our speaker, Mr. John Sherwin, who has been with us a number of times, pleased to say. You're receiving me? There are looks of... Oh, thank you, sir. John, significant career in the teaching profession, retired in 2000, don't know exactly these dates, but and joined Victim Support not long afterwards. And thereafter, in 2005, joined Witness Support, which I think is probably going to major much in your talk, sir. So without further ado, it's my pleasure to introduce John.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Sir.
Thank
you.
Good evening, everyone. And it's nice to see so many faces. And I hope at the end, as Nigel said, he asked me for a pithy title. He said, what can you call it? And I said, Caught in the Act. And he said, well, yes, but we need something else as well. So I gave him another strapline saying, The Witness Service in Action. Now, how many of you have been to court in not criminally, but you may have been possibly as a jury member, or possibly had to be a witness. Quite a lot of you, so you know all about it. That's fine, and that's the end of this evening's talk. Then I'm going to try and give you an idea what it's like today in court. Literally, what happens if you have to come to court as a witness, and everyone at some time is likely to. It's amazing, because you might be out there tomorrow and see something happen, and the next thing you know, there'll be a policeman around asking, or police lady, could you help, because you saw something important, and then you're in court. Not quite as quick as that. But before we do that, I've got something I'd like to do with you. It's you probably played Kim's Game when you were young children. I certainly did. Or maybe with your grandchildren now. So this is John's version, because I thought Kim's Game, I remember, they bring a tray in with goodies and they put it in front of you. We see it for a minute and then they take it away and you remember 20, 30, 40, if you're lucky. And you get a prize and a sweet at the end. Well, my version's slightly different. No prizes and you're all intelligent and you'll all get everything quickly. So we'll just show you a few things. I've got a lovely assistant who's going to help me, Brian. He said he volunteered to help me. As he put my name forward, I said I thought you might like to volunteer. So I'm going to show you a few things, first of all, out of the box. There's one which you might recognise is obviously a T-shirt. It's got a turtle, I'm not sure if it's a tortoise or a turtle on there, and it says, I am a very busy person. Thank you very much. Could you like to pop that away? Then I've got a stress ball. Would you like to hold the stress ball and describe it for us? Is it working?
It's working, yes.
You're not stressed at all.
Citizen's advice. Citizens' advice, witness service, supporting witnesses.
It's got some wording on it. Citizens' advice, supporting witnesses in court. Stress ball. So that's quite useful if you're under stress, of course, in court. You might be. We have a tin of asparagus. I don't know what it's got to do with court. Anyway, it's whole asparagus. It's Sainsbury's, but there are other supermarkets available. And I have to say that because, as you see, we're being recorded for Radio 4 at the moment. In fact, it's not recorded, it's live, I think. So you might be actually on Radio 4. So you can play it back when I play it. It's a tin of whole asparagus spears in water and salt added. And it's out of date. We have some sweeties. If you like extra strong, Trebor, extra strong. We've got, oh, this is lovely. I like these. This is especially for those who like local crafts. I don't know if you like local crafts. This, unfortunately, it's lost a bit of its beautiful wood. I love wood, and it's got some lovely grain, nice apple. And that's one of a local craftsman's bit of work in Titchfield. So, but unfortunately, the stalk broke off and it fell on the floor when I went to answer the phone quickly once. So thank you for that one. A little stripy tie, which I don't wear very often, for obvious reasons. It's a little bit bright for me, but that's a beautiful tie, Thomas Nash tie. Then we've got a ceramic bowl, little ceramic bowl. Could you describe the colours on there for those who might not see, please? What the colours are?
Small bowl, material being red. There's turquoise, blue, white.
Nothing personal, thank you. Right, thank you. You did well there without the rehearsal. Page 41, I've got a book here about the Hailing Railway. I think a lot of blokes like railways and transport. And there's a nice bit in here about the surprising things that were going to be happening. At the North Hailing Annual Parish Meeting, held late in March 1899, just a little while ago, discussion opened with reference to the flooding of land and houses by high tides in Langston Harbour, near North Hailing Station. W. Carpenter Turner reported that the council had been communicating with the London, Brighton and South Coast Railway with the hope of inducing the company to raise the level of the railway or erect a sea wall alongside the permanent way. I don't know they did that very well because it was going to all link up with South Sea, the little branch they had. There's one odd sock I found. Rather strange sock, because when you put it on, you can't see the colours, because your toes, of course, are hidden by shoes, and the heels hidden as well. So everyone thinks you've got black socks, but rather pretty. But only one. And one more thing is an old toothbrush. I don't know if you've got some like that or whether you've got any teeth, but they're quite nice to have. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you for that. So now what I'd like you to do, if you could, is to talk to your neighbour. I'm going to give you 30 seconds to answer a couple of questions based on good old Kim or John's game. So, first question, if you'd like to talk amongst yourselves, then I'll come and ask you what you thought out. First question, a tin of what? And what page did I quote from? Could you like to talk to your neighbour and see if you can give you an answer, and we'll ask someone in a minute. So what was the tin and what was the page number from the Hailing book? Don't ask Brian, because he's not allowed to say.
Yeah, 41.
41, good, and a tin of... In fact, I was asked that. Good. So it's straightforward. Next one I'm going to give you, and again you can talk to your neighbour if you like. What were the colours on the tie? And how many items have I shown you? And what was the fourth item? Right, 30 seconds. Colours on the tie. How many items? And what was the fourth one?
No idea.
Ah. 10 seconds left. And there we are. Thank you. Right, would you like to say what you think, one of the answers? You can't? Right, that's very good. Have you got an answer? No?
Pink, black, and red.
Pink?
Pink, red, black.
Pink, red, and grey. We'll have a look in a minute. I'll get Brian to show you. Brian, could you like to show tie, please? These are various colours on the tie. We can't find it now. You got it there? Thank you. Pink, of course, is the dominant colour. Yes, there's grey and there's white. And I suppose silver. Silvery black, yeah. That's it. We'll let you have that. Number of items shown. Could you tell me what you think? How many did I show you? Good heavens. No, that wasn't it.
13.
Wrong. 15? No. Do you know how many?
Guess at
11. It's actually 10. What was the fourth item I showed you? Oh, no. Don't ask me. They're all going to sleep here. They're pretending. They're thinking. The apple? There was an apple, you're right. But it wasn't the fourth item. The fourth item, possibly? No, wasn't it asparagus? No, not the pottery. Not the book, no. There aren't many left. Come on. It was... Sweets. He's going to have one now. Extra strong. Right. Last question for both of you, then you have a short break. And that is, what was the main colour on the side of the bowl? And what was the colour, if any, of the headgear on the tortoise? Or the turtle, whatever you like to call it, on the t-shirt. Think about that and see. So it's the colour on the bowl and the headgear. If there was one, or if there was any, what were the colours? That's good, I like that. 10 seconds coming up. Can you reveal now, please, Brian? Yes, he had got a headband, and it's mostly, of course, white and red stripe. Good. If you got that, well done, pat on the back. And the other one, of course, was the colour of the ceramic bowl. Mostly, not just green, but sort of light green, leaf green, grass green, whatever you like to call it. Not dark green, bottle green. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you for being a super assistant. Will indeed. Well, that gives you a sort of flavour of the things. All right, it's a bit of like Kim's game. But I can tell you, when you do see something... You're not sitting down, of course, it's not a bit of fun. You are actually there and your adrenaline runs quickly because something happens, you see it, and first of all, you don't believe it because you look at it again and you're in shock. And the second thing, of course, is you're trying to put it all in perspective. So someone runs out from in front of you, having just robbed a shop, and bumps into you at a fairum, then, first of all, it's a shock. Do you remember that person? Can you describe them? What were they carrying? What do they look like? And so on. Because that's what they want to know if the police see or get a witness. So the first thing they want to do is get some information from you. And it could easily be that you might be required to be an honest citizen and give your evidence and say what you remember as best you can, and you will talk to somebody hopefully soon after the incident. I saw a hit and run about 3 years ago in my mirror. It was all happening in my rear view mirror, and I tried to remember the number plate, which I could do, and I remember them saying when I rang up, are you willing to be able to give a statement? I said, yes, sir, I will. And I thought, God, I can try and remember. I was jotting down things, and then the policeman rang up about an hour later, and I was relieved, really, and said, are you free this evening? So I was able to tell them. But it doesn't happen like that every time. Of course, sometimes you might get people coming, they're willing to do it, and the police see you in a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks' time. So you're trying to remember that. So that's what happened. Then you've said your statement, the police have written it down, they'll show you, are you happy with that? And at the very end, as you know, if you've done it, it'll say, I'm prepared to come to court if required. And then you forget it. And you forget it for weeks, months, it might not come, might not happen, and then you get a letter through the door saying you're required to come to court to give evidence. And this could be 6 weeks, 7 weeks, 6 months, a year, 2 years after. And if you come to court, which you will do to give your evidence, you could meet me or someone like me. I put my uniform on tonight, so there we are. We have one badge. Obviously, there's no other uniform. The way the witness service works is you've got managers who are paid. Like most charities, there are managers who are paid and volunteers who meet the public and help to do that. Now, I'm part of the volunteer team at Portsmouth Crown Court. So I go on a Tuesday. In fact, that's why I was late. I got back late. The bus was delayed. The traffic was chaotic. And I got back just in time to be here. Nigel was worrying a bit. I think he thought he was going to have to do a bit of juggling tonight or something like that. Or improvising. And so when they come in this morning, I didn't know who was coming. Things change all the time, even change on the day. So it's not suitable for anyone who's not used to having things being fairly flexible. And the joy I find is you meet a whole range of people. But they've all got one thing in common. And that is, what do you think? They've all got one thing in common.
Nervous,
yes, absolutely. I haven't met one person yet in 11 years who's not nervous. They might come in and say, I'm all right. You know, Jack the lad comes in, I've been in before, mate. I've done it before. I'm usually the other side. Oh, yeah. So I don't need to tell you about, tell me about court procedures. Or they sit there quite happy. No, I've done it all before. And then just before they're going in, the name is called, could you come with me to court for? Could you just go through, what do I have to do? What oath do I take? What do I do? And they start shaking. It's amazing. There is not one human being. And you wouldn't be normal, of course, if you weren't nervous. Because it's strange. It's unusual. And it's daunting. And even more, it's worrying, because everything you say, a bit like this broadcast tonight, is being listened to and criticised critically. Because the jury are sitting on every word you say. Because they're writing down what the main points are. They weren't there. You were. And they don't know anything about it. So they jot those things down. So that's the one common thing. So what we can do, or try and do, is to put them at ease. Not a good position to be in, because they're not visiting a supermarket, they're not going to a fun thing, but they are nervous. So we can relax them, come in the waiting room, there's coffee, tea, help yourself, we'll go through things for you. And I think, like all humans in a strange situation, want the reassurance that A, they're normal. Is it normal for people to be like, I'm terrible, I couldn't sleep for a week, I haven't been eating. Is it normal? Yes. We all like to be different, but we like to be normal, whatever normal is. So they like to be reassured. Once they're reassured, that helps. They want to, I can't remember a thing I said on that statement. You'll get it in a moment. The Crown Prosecution will get a phone call from me when I've got the name, your name is so-and-so, you're in court so-and-so. I ring up and say, I've got Charlie Bloggs here, or whatever his name is. Can I have the statement? And they bring it down and they give you a statement to you. And a claim form for expenses, which is quite relief for some people, because they're quite hard up. Then, of course, they get their statement, and there are some people who look at it and think, this is all gobbledygook. I don't remember this. Did I say that? I said, I don't know. I can't discuss it with you. But if you've got a problem, and sometimes there are real problems, because it's been typed up from a written note, and, of course, they've got the wrong date, the wrong time. some bit is wrong, then we go and get the police officer and say, look, it's a police statement, I can't discuss it, but I can get the officer, come and discuss it with you. Because you're about to go into court, and it's no good you thinking, I've got it right, and it's wrong, if that's what you think. It's your evidence. So they've had the coffee, the tea, they're sitting there thinking, and they're watching the clock, like you are. How long is it going to be? You did say 10:30, yes? Lock up 10:30. So the worst bit is now, because they're sitting, they've got in, they've calmed down, they want to be in court. It says on my letter, 10 o'clock. But that's 10 o'clock to be here, not to go into court. And as you'll know, if you've done jury service, things come and go, things change minute by minute. There's a legal argument, someone's taken ill, sometimes we have a jury member taken ill, so that trial stops then. So they're told, sorry, you're going to have to go home today. Are you doing anything tomorrow? Because you're in court. But I can't come. You have to come. The judge has ordered it. You have to come. It's your duty, as a civic duty, to come to court. But I've got to go to work. No, you haven't got to go to work. You've got to be in court. But I can't. You'll get a summons. I don't want a summons. You will get a summons, and the police will come round. We've had one or two. Very interesting. He brought in with a flashing blue light. You don't want to go to court the next day, but they have to go in. And they're brought in judge's orders. Because once you've said and signed, I'm prepared to come, you can't retract. Some people try to. They used to years ago, and of course wasted court time. I'm not going to go. We still get them retracting unofficially, because what they do, they don't turn up. And they, funny enough, they can't be found. And their mobile's changed, or they're not switched on. And they're not in. They move. So there have been cases. In fact, there's one today that just fell apart because two, three witnesses didn't appear. Judge says, right, we'll summons them if we can, but if not, there'll be no trial. And sadly, sometimes it happens because they've been intimidated or threatened by the defendant, the person charged. It's got a group, a gang, a mate. It won't be him or her. It'll be somebody who's gone round and threatened them. If you come to court, if you say it's the end of your family, or you won't wish to be in living in this area, or something like that. It's interesting hearing what the police say about them, because they've got no real proof. They can't say this person did this, because it's all hearsay. So people feel very, very intimidated sometimes, not just by coming into the building, but by the fact that someone has said something to them. So what we're wrestling with is someone who's nervous, someone who doesn't know what's happening, and also they're going into a strange situation. They've come into the building and they're looking around already thinking, I feel guilty. The number of times people have said to me, just coming into court, I feel guilty. I said, but you're not, you're a witness. You haven't done anything, have you? But they do, they feel, it's the atmosphere. Then they start seeing barristers walking about with their grey wigs and black gown and the ushers, and they start thinking, oh, this is a strange place. I don't like being here and I'm worried. So if you've been in that situation as a jury member or even giving evidence, you'll know exactly what it's like and you'll empathise. The hard bit we try and do is to say, reassure them. We also say that we'll try and keep them informed, because the worst thing, I think, for anyone, isn't it, is sitting there watching the clock, not knowing when I'm going in, and no one comes to tell them. Nobody comes to say, you'll be in about 30 minutes, all right? Don't worry about it, you'll be in soon. So our job is to go and find out, to remind the barristers, remind someone. And it's amazing, I cannot believe it. It still happens every day that I go, they forget they've got witnesses downstairs in the witness room. They know they've got them, but they've forgotten all about them. They're busy with their chores, they're doing their bits. Oh yes, I said I'd be, oh, I forgot to come and see them. The witness sits there thinking they're not bothered, not interested. But they are, of course, but they're so busy doing things. But they don't see it, out of sight, out of mind. So all they've been through is all these magazines, in our old magazines we've got, and they're fed up with those, they've done everything they can, they've had 20 cups of tea, they're desperate for the loo, and then no one knows what's happening. So what we try and do then is to explain what's happening, go through the court procedures, because often they won't know what's happening, they'll know they've got a statement, but we tell them what they're likely to do. We are not allowed to discuss the evidence. That's one big no-no. I've lost a lot of colleagues. A lot of volunteers have gone almost overnight There's one I remember, one lady, she knew she'd done it. She was about 20 to 1, I think it was, something like that, in court with someone who got screened. Sometimes they can have curtains around them. So if a witness is really worried about seeing the person charged or the person seeing them, they know that they're nervous anyway, that would make them worse. There is a way of doing it, that you can have screens. So if you've not been, not seen it, you'll notice sometimes they can do that. They can also be on a TV link in another room, but of course they'll be seen on the screen, but they won't actually experience being in the room, because some people find that daunting, just being there. All these people about, they're all looking at me. I've got to speak. They can't do it, but they can do it on a TV link. In this particular case, the lady was behind screens. She'd been struggling for about an hour or so, and she broke down in tears. Not surprising, that happens quite often because we have some really nasty cases, and it's horrible because they have to go through every bit and relive it. Though we've warned them this is going to happen, it's not easy. You could imagine if you've been assaulted. We have people, of course, who've been... We go from burglary to attempted murder at Portsmouth Crown Court. And there are some people who, if you're dealing with a historic sexual case, I had one today, I was with someone, or a rape case, imagine having to go through all of that evidence, bit by bit by bit. It's not just tell us, just a soupçon, it's a whole detail they want to go through. And that's daunting enough. So, of course, this lady was quite distressed, 20 to 1, lunch is 1 to 2, so that my colleague looked at the clock and thought, well, it's not long now. So she went and comforted her. Well, of course, everyone went out. The jury went out for a minute. The judge sent them all out to help her and said, look, try and get her to calm down. And she said, you're doing really well. You're doing really well, and you don't want to let him get away with it. So you've only got 20 minutes, then you'll have a lunch break. Well, you've laughed, and you know what happened. Everything we say and do in court now is recorded like this, because once you've left and given your evidence, the jury have to decide. They've written notes, or they've got hopefully good brains and writing as much as they can, but there might still be 12 people there. There might still be differences, and there might only be a tiny bit. It could be a vital part of the evidence. So if they're not sure, they bring them back into court and play what was said, so it's what the evidence is, not what they think it is. And of course, one of the clerks heard at lunchtime, going through just checking the tapes, heard this conversation, picked up. By the end of the afternoon, she was no longer with us. The judge had ordered that she leave. You never get a second chance. You have to be totally impartial. We cannot be involved. And so I think people find it hard sometimes. They say they want to tell us about what happened to them. Of course, they've got no one else there. They've been through it themselves. They're worried about it. They want to tell. I said, I'm sorry, I cannot discuss that. And I mustn't even hint that I'm... They say, have I done well? I said, you've done really well in making it clear, because the jury didn't put their hand up. Nobody was out without hearing. That's all I can say. Or something like that. I cannot say, yeah, you did really well. You're convincing them all. Because they then think, they go home, yeah, case is fine. They'll get the verdict I want. But we're not there to judge. We're not judges. We're not the jury. We're simply helping them. So that lady disappeared. We've had other cases where similar things have happened, and the least little thing, the criminal justice system is quite tight, and anything like that is goodbye. Thank you for your services. Off you go. And people find that hard, but I think you'll agree that we have to be neutral. Then we can do the service justice. Sometimes, because it's expensive in terms of time and manpower, they try their best not to waste court time. And there was a case last 2 or 3 years ago where someone, it was obvious to the judge, and I think to the barristers, that this person was guilty. But they can't say that. They have a right to be tried by jury, and this person had a right to and came forward. But they also have introduced, about 4 years ago, a late guilty plea. So if you do a plea on the day of the trial, you get a discount. I think it's 10% discount on your sentence. If you do it before, that's 25%. Like, buy one, get one for, you know. But the reason, of course, is it's expensive. Running a car is several thousand pounds a day. And that's not my fee. It's just a bus fare, I claim. So I don't know where they get the thousand. It's probably the judge, is it? Playing golf with you. I know. Anyway, this judge, this particular judge, said, I want you to go and talk to your barrister and come back and see me in half an hour. Go and listen to what he has to say. Hoping the defence barrister would say, look, it's pretty obvious. Why waste it? Get your sentence, have a reduction. He came back. Four times the judge said, I've said to you, go and listen to... Fourth time he came back and said, guilty. And then because he wiped the floor with him and said, about time too, because I've... And I think he'd seen him before. So he said, you know you're wasting our time if you go on like this. So he didn't get his proper percentage off because he wasted time on that morning. But he had saved 4 days worth of court, which is a lot of time and money, and get some genuine people in. So they are conscious of the fact of doing that. But of course the judge can't say you are guilty. You've got to say you're guilty. Sorry?
Everyone's got a right to time.
Well, I know, but that's the view. I'm not the justice system. I'm just telling you what they're saying. I think you say that, but it's public interest. You hear someone's on television, the Crown Prosecution Service, they decide whether it goes to court, and they have to judge whether it's in the public interest. And often, if there's an appeal or something like that, they'll say, is it in the public interest? In other words, is it that important? Is it going to be any better? Will we get a different answer? And are we going to save money? Because a lot of it's about money, sad to say. So I'm sure you've all got ideas about whether the criminal justice system is perfect, but I often wonder what other system we could have, because people sometimes say, do I have to go through all this? I know the man's guilty, or I know the woman's guilty. I said, you do, or you think you do, because you were involved, but you can't just walk into court and say, that man over there in the red shirt is guilty. Sorry, Nigel, you've got 10 years. Because 5 years, if you're good. But you see, what other system would there be? Or could you have? That's what it's built on, of course, trial by jury, and you're innocent to proven guilty. And everyone has a right, even though you might think, well, they definitely are. Except when it's so close, like that judge I was describing, he could see all the evidence in front. There wasn't a dispute about lots of things, thinking, well, this is going to waste everyone's time. So it is, yeah, I know what you mean. Sometimes you think, well, is it fair? What is fair? That would be a good debate, wouldn't it? What is fair in court? But the main thing I think that I'm trying to get across to you is the witness service itself. What we do is to try and help those people just that little tiny bit on that day. Poor things, they get a survey to do as well, let alone worry about everything else. We have to give them, because citizens' advice run the witness service. And of course they want feedback because they want satisfaction that 98% of people were thrilled with the witness service or whatever it is. Because they then get support and money from the Home Office as well as raising funds separately. And of course Home Office wants stats, they want figures, they want evidence. And it's also that we covered everybody. People with wooden legs, white people, black people, pink people, green people, everyone is on the form. So they have to fill in that form in. And often people don't want to do it. Because of simple reason is they've got enough to do. Why pester me this? I'm really, really distressed. And I think it's one of the most difficult situations. I have to try and choose the right time. Because if people are really emotionally distressed, which they are very often, what's the point of saying, could you just fill in this form? I'm sorry to worry you, and it's anonymous, and just put it in that box. They go, go away, John. It's written on their face. They don't want to do it. I don't want to do it when I go to shopping centres. I've got just a minute, I want to go away. But I'm not under an emotional stress. It's the most stressful situation. I think there's several, aren't there? Moving house, death, marriage, is marriage? There's several stressful situations. But going to court is quite high up. And if you've ever been involved directly, you'll know. Because the thought of going to give that evidence and that people are going to hear you and write down everything you say is quite stressful. Knowing also, if you watch television, it's not like that, of course, but knowing that the prosecutor's lovely, going to ask you questions on your statement, but the defence barrister's not going to be lovely, he's going to cross-examine you or test you. I put it to you that you didn't see that. How could you? It was dark. I put it to you, you weren't there. I put it to you, you're lying. At one time, they couldn't even say that, but they can now. I put it to you, you're telling the jury a pack of lies. And you're told this, and you're distressed, and you've been, I mean, it must be really painful inside to be told that. They don't believe me. But it's quite effective sometimes, because they'll shout out to them and say, you don't listen to me. You don't believe me. I do sometimes get involved with young children because I was teaching. They asked me if I'd work with primary children. That was the youngest I've worked with is 5. And we work right up to anyone who's 18 and under. They're deemed to be vulnerable young people. Anyone who's that age, whether they are particularly vulnerable. And I remember one 10-year-old boy, I said to him, the main thing is to tell the truth. Like, that's the only thing I can. I can't coach them, but I can say, and I kept saying, tell the truth. Make sure you do that, if nothing else. And the court proceedings stopped, and I was asked to go up to court, and I thought, well, as far as I know, what's wrong? They said, could you come and see us, please? So I thought, oh, no, I'm in for the chop like the lady. I must have said, done something. What is it? Judge wants to see you. And I went in, and they said, can you tell us what you've done with this young lad? What have you actually done? Because defense counsel are questioning what's happened. And of course, he had said, I wasn't in court, so I didn't see it. The defense barrister was saying, you are telling a lie in court in front of us. The man didn't hit you with a broom. You hit him and your little group of friends. And he said, you're not listening to me. I've told you 3 times. It was the other way around. And he said, John told me to say that. And because defense thought, great, he's been coached by John, we'll sort him out. But of course, what I had said, and the judge believed me, and I had said, tell the truth. And he was cross with this barrister. He didn't care whether he got a wig or a gown. Certainly, I find the younger people, 6 to 11-ish, roughly, not worried about whether it's an old man with a judge or an old lady or whoever. They just tell them. It's when they get teenagers a bit more self-conscious, a bit more worried and a bit more concerned about what they're saying. But this young lad has stuck up for it. He said, well, you told me to. I said, I know. And I was really pleased he'd done it. So the least little thing, they're going to jump out and see what they can do. So when people come in, I've told you about ordinary witnesses. I also touched on just now working with outreach. They call it outreach, which means I would get a case given me by my manager and said, are you prepared to do this? What they're very good at, they go through, the trial is going to be November. This is in August. If you can arrange to go and see them, home visit, because obviously it's safer for them. They're in their own environment. I meet them with mum and dad or whoever. And then we bring them into court if they want to. Then or nearer the time of the trial for what we call a pre-trial visit. So they come into court, it's absolutely empty, it's quiet, they're on their own, and they can look around and see where they'll be, where people will be. We've got all sorts of things for them as well. We've got puzzles, games, activities that they can do and have if they want, all based around it. I've even got one if you want, I've got a CD of a little, what I call Mr. Blobby. It's sort of like a blue blob. And blue blob goes to Magistrates Court, and blue blob goes to Crown Court. And so they can have that if they want, go home and look at it and see. It gives them the ideas of the main things happening. So they gradually get the feel of going to court. And then on the days that they're at court, I'm with the family as well. So they've seen me right through. Stage by stage or whoever. That's the idea. A familiar face in a strange place. Still not easy for them, however you are, because they've got to do it. They, of course, don't go into court. Nobody that age will go in court. They will go in a TV link room. There is talk of having those links in a remote area. In other words, maybe a citizen's advice bureau in the local town, which would be linked by television to the court, rather than actually going in the building. But at the moment, they go in the building, but in a totally different room. It's in a waiting room. They go to, and the only thing they see on the screen will be the judge or the barrister asking questions. The camera's very good. It's very click. It just clicks from one to the other. It doesn't go round and show everybody sitting there looking, because that would be even more daunting, I think. And of course, we can show them the picture of themselves, because there's a little box on the screen, that's you, that little screen, and they can see you in court. They're not too worried about that, because they're not actually in the courtroom. And then we do follow-up. That's not the end of it. When they've finished their time giving evidence, maybe a week or two later, we ring up the parents and the child to find out how are things now. Because often that's the worst time, because they've been building up, given the evidence, and there's an emotional drain. And they feel really sometimes let down. They're cross with themselves because they didn't say what they wanted. They weren't asked the right questions. And all these things come out. And you're in an emotional whirlwind, really. Most people, adults as well, but children particularly find it very, very confusing in an adult world. And I feel sometimes it's such a shame they have to come. But how else can you find out? You have to hear what they have to say. It can't be hearsay, it can't be gossip. It's got to be what you experienced. And so that's the outreach program, which I tend to get two cases at once, but not over, they're overlapping, they're not together, so that when I've been halfway through with one, I start another one. But again, the nice thing is, the manager will say, are you free, can you do it, you choose. There's a small outreach team of volunteers, and then they choose between us who can go. Some don't want a man, some don't want a woman, some don't care. They're given a choice, and so we try and match up if we can. The day in court, for most people, is probably, as I say, one of the worst situations they could ever be in. And we're lucky, really, I think, because most people seem to get through, however traumatic it is, however hard it is for them. And what they tend to do is to, at the end, when it's all over, they tend to want to go away from the building, get away, but it's just a nice occasion to say, thank you for what you've done, thank you for your help. You get that little bit as well, sometimes. Now, I'll give you an idea of the things that we do, particularly with the children, I find quite useful, is we have what they call a rucksack of worries. I can, if I want to, read them a story, but it depends. You obviously pitch at the right age and right level, but they have big worries, they have medium worries. Sometimes the adults like this as well, because they're... And sometimes small worries. But they're all worries about court. And what are the sort of worries that we give them? Well, we don't actually give them worries. We give them separate cards. And what is good about, I think, with adults and children, is it breaks the ice. Because if I went up to you and said, are you worried about going to court? You'd probably say, well, yes, you fool. Of course I am. Go away. But I give them statements. And these are statements that they might be given. People won't believe me. I'll have to stand up in front of people. Now, unless you're a teacher or a vicar or an MP, you probably don't speak to lots of people, and that's bad enough. I'll have to talk to people I don't know. I might cry. That's often worry, and adults as well. What happens if I cry? You cry. You can't bottle it up. That happens. My family will hear what happened. Well, they won't, because you can choose that they don't come into court. I'll be embarrassed. My family might be cross with me when they find out what happened. I won't be able to control my temper. It'll be like TV, and that looks so scary. Obviously, watch Strictly Come Dancing. I won't remember anything that happened. I might make a mistake or say something wrong, and so it goes on. So I lay these cards out for them and say, now, well, is that a big worry, a small worry, medium worry? Well, that's not a worry at all. We put that away, and then we whittle it down, and then we talk through the various worries so that they can express themselves and say it. And I find that way, when there's a card, it's sort of less personal, because it's about the card, not me asking a question. But we're doing the same thing. And it works well with adults as well, because nobody likes being confronted. You know, of course I've got worries. What do you mean? So it's a useful way, it's just a useful tool, and that's one of many that we use with people to help them and to go through those points. Now, some of those I mentioned there, it always seems to happen. I don't know about you, but whenever I'm nervous, My bladder seems to want to work overtime, and my brain also does because it goes blank. And these are common things that people have going to court. They get in the witness box, they've read the statement 100 times down, or maybe exaggeration, they've read it a lot anyway, and then they get in there and they're asked a question, and they come out and say, my mind went absolutely blank. But we now obviously warn them beforehand that might happen. They're rescued, of course, because they're going to ask if they can see their statement. They can't take it in with them, but there's a copy in the court and they can ask. And the judge will normally say yes. They want you to read it because they want, the judge's job is to get the best evidence now. Not when you've gone home and you suddenly think of something, it's too late, but they want it now. So their job is to give you a statement to say, there you are, and then is that what you said? So I won't remember anything that's quite common. I might want a break to go to the toilet or smoke or something. That's also quite common because people who do smoke tend to want to smoke more. The courts are prepared for this. They may all look very sober judges and sitting there with their wigs and gowns and looking very formal, but they are aware of human beings and their frailties. Much to people's surprise. And you don't have to say Your Honour or Your Worship or anything like that. Just say, I'd like a break. And that relieves people as well because people do worry, of course, and say, not just going to a strange place, but what do I say? What's the right thing to say? Because I'm in this strange building, strange process. The other part of our job is to, in the preparation, particularly when I'm with outreach, is to say, it may not go your way. You are convinced you saw this. You're convinced you heard this. You're convinced that person's guilty. But the jury might not think so. If you've been on a jury, I've been on twice now, and you've got 12 people, and they've all got different things they've heard, different views, different baggage they bring with them. They've got their own life history, and they see things differently. So though you're sitting next to each other, thinking about what you've just seen, you will see a different picture. You will make a different decision. And sometimes, just sometimes, that verdict isn't what people think. Not always, but sometimes. Simply because the judge will say as they go, and if you've been in jury, you'll know, beyond reasonable doubt. Those three magic words. So the jury have to decide, in all probability, this person did it. Or whatever the charge is. And if you can't, they're not guilty. If you're definitely sure, you're more than likely, from what I've heard, evidence I've seen, guilty. And I know I did one case years ago, and I was asked to be foreman of the jury. Okay, we did that. And we had 10 of us agreed, and two ladies could not agree because he was a nice young man and he looks lovely. But that wasn't the evidence. And we went on and on and on. I remember we were 2 days just hammering it all out. It was a fraud case. It had been on and on, as details we had. We went through all the evidence, and they kept saying, he's such a nice young man. That's all they could say. They were sweet old ladies, but they just thought he was a nice... Look, he looks a nice young man. He can't have done it. But what's the evidence in front of you? Look at the evidence. And eventually we all agreed. Yeah, they said, all right, we'll go along. We went into court. We gave our announcement of 14 charges. I think we found 12 guilty, 2 we weren't sure. Well, in those days, you didn't know anything else about them until you announced that. And then the judge went through a string of offences before, all these fraud cases. It went on and on, and I thought, good grief. And I never forget those two ladies when we came out and said, we were right, weren't we? I said, we were right? We were right? Hold on, you were... Oh, yes, well, yeah, I know, but he did look nice, didn't he? They still hung on to that. But what it is, of course... Nobody wants to send someone to prison if, in fact, they're not guilty. There is quite a responsibility for ordinary folk like you and I to say, yes, that's definitely guilty, and we know it's going to be 10 years in prison or whatever. It's quite a worry, quite a responsibility. And I think these ladies really genuinely didn't want to see this lovely young man go to prison. But when they found out what he'd done before, they wanted him in now, straight away. In fact, he was taken away because they're usually prepared. He said, bring your overnight stuff because you'll be going somewhere else, probably. So it's people bringing things with them. So it's not a perfect world. I can't think of another way it might be, but that's the system, and we always try and prepare people that you know, you think it happened, you saw it, but don't be surprised if that jury can't agree. Sometimes it's a hung jury, 6-6, and it's a retrial. And you think, oh no, I've been through it all, I've got to go through it all again. Afraid so. There's a girl I had, a young lady I had last year working with very closely. It was a rape case, historical, in the family, and she kept on, she was convinced it happened, and all that. We don't know, of course. She could have made it all up, we don't know. But the jury were 50-50. And I said, well, she said, what does that mean? I said, it's a hung jury, you'll have to come back again, there'll be a new date, new trial, new everything. And she just burst into tears. And she said, I'm not going through with it. I can't go through it all over again. My life has been ruined. I spent almost a year getting ready for this and really feeling distressed. And I can't go through it again. I just cannot go. And they couldn't make her go to court, because you can't make people. And so, never happened. Now you could say that's unfair, because the person, if he was guilty, got away with it. But we don't know. She could have made the whole story up to get attention. Who knows? So those sort of things might happen. So to sum up, I think what I've talked about is what we do. We talked about pre-trial visits for people. Anyone can have those. A lot of people don't, I'm surprised, but they get to court on the day and say, I wish I had one. I wish I'd come now. Is there any chance I can pop up now? We can't pop up because the court started. So we can do our best. We can sometimes find an empty court, and I can take them up and say, this, that's where the judge sits, that's the jury. We've got to be very quick because someone's coming. But it's a shame they don't take it up. But pre-trial, it's voluntary if people want to, and they can come and sit and ask questions as well. They always want to know the obvious things, as how long will the questions be? Well, who knows? And I'm not going to use the usual one, as long as a piece of string, but all I can say to them is, we don't know. Because we don't know, it depends on what you say, how you answer it, what they want to know. And I've seen people with statements really thick, like that, you know, 20, 30 pages. I thought, my goodness, they could be all day. And they're about an hour. And then someone else with one side of A4 could be all morning. And you think, how can they be in all that time? But because defence want to go on through every single thing, and they go all this way and then that way, asking questions all directions, because they're there to test them. So it's nothing to do, you can't measure it. So the safest thing to say is, just go with it, just answer the questions. And once you start answering, you'll find the time will go. If you're sitting here, looking through the magazines and drinking coffee, that clock is almost stationary. But when you're in the courtroom, talk, you talk to the person, time will go. And they come out and say, do you know it's only quarter of an hour? I said, you've been in 1 hour 10 minutes. That happens so often. No, you were. But I thought it just went quickly. Because, of course, they're occupied. They're talking to the, being asked questions, focusing their mind. So, there you are. Pre-trial visits, court procedures we go through, and other things that we talk about sometimes will be the follow-up. We can lead them into others. I think the phrase is, we signpost them to other things. So if they've got other worries. Now, often people who come with a problem like this, they've got other worries in their family and they want to talk about it, and there's a time to talk about it. And I've had people sit down and say, I don't know how much longer I can cope like this. We're in debt. We're in this. We've got that. I said, you're in debt. Have you sorted that? What are you doing about it? And we can signpost you and things like that. So I don't go up and say, are you in debt? Are you involved with domestic violence or whatever? But things come up in conversation. All of a sudden, they become your friend and they trust you because they get to know you. And they say some interesting things, revealing things. And we have to be there alert and say, right, we can put you in touch with so-and-so if you like. Yes, please, whatever. Most people want some help. But it's strange to find that very often someone in difficulty or has a problem then relates others that are around them. So that's the design of the service. Now, as far as the volunteers go, we have to be trained, can't be let loose. In fact, I had someone today who's been shadowing me, and she's about to be accredited. So when you've gone through the core training of 3 days, then you have more training, then you have to observe the trial, different stages of trials, because you bet your bottom dollar, if you got someone and they're going to say, well, what happens next? And what happens when I've finished? Well, if you've never been in a court to see, you'll say, well, on page so-and-so, it says this. he's got to come from what you've seen. So they encourage us to watch, observe, go in. And what happens about sentencing? When will I know about that? What happens at sentencing? These questions come out. So we have to be trained for that. We are then re-accredited, I think that's the phrase, every 3 years. Because the law changes, situations change, things you aren't allowed to say change, things you are allowed to say change. And so we have to be up to date with that. And sometimes people fall. They don't go through. So there's no guarantee, because I've done 11 years, I should do it forever, or if I wanted to, because if I'm not trained or don't meet the requirements, it's goodbye, John. It's tough as that. Because they're accountable to the Criminal Justice Service. Though we're volunteers, we are accountable, like the whole system. So there's accreditation and re-accreditation, and I suppose really that, hopefully that reassures people that we're not just a bunch of do-gooders who come along every Tuesday or whenever a day I go, make a cup of tea and sit and chat. They want us to be as close as you can to professionally trained people with no money. There's no money in the system. I do get a bus fare and I do get a lunch. So I get £5 for lunch. And I get a bus fare or train fare, or if I drive so much a mile. I don't drive to Portsmouth now because I so often sat on the motorway, not able to ring and say I'm stuck. But you're needed in court, so the bus usually gets through with bus lanes and everything else, or the train, of course, gets through. And they'll pay that. And if I have to use the phone for outreach, they'll pay those expenses as well. So you do get expenses. A bit like if you're on the jury, or if you go as a witness, you'll get a claim form to help towards it. I hope that's given you a flavour of what we do. I'm open to questions, if you've got any questions, because we have to go by 10:30. So we've got...
Well, no, we hope by half past.
I misunderstood what Nigel told me.
It does.
Yes. And are there any points or questions you'd like? I'll do my best.
Are witnesses allowed in public gallery before or after?
Yes, once you've given your evidence, you can go in. What we say to people is that often they want to go and see, of course, how things are going. And I want to see what he's looking like or she's looking like, because the defendant has to be in the court all the time. They have a right to hear what's said about them until they're questioned, of course, but they take part just the same. The golden rule is you cannot go into court until you've given your evidence, because you might hear something else and that might influence you. But once you've given your evidence, you can just walk out the witness box, sit in the public gallery. They call it a gallery, but it's actually seats like this on the floor at Portsmouth. It is in Winchester, it is a gallery. But the only difference is, if you've had curtain rail, you've had screens, we suggest to people, but we can't make them, would it be sensible to go? Because you've been behind screens, so you don't see this person, and they don't see you, and the jury have seen you behind screens, what are they going to think when you're sitting there, everyone can see you? Was that really convinced? Was that necessary? Why did you have curtains? And that might undermine your very case of wanting screens. So most people say, oh yeah, I understand. I've had one or two say, oh, I'm going to go, I'm determined to go and see. Be it on your own head, it's up to you. So the answer is yes, after they give evidence. Long way of saying it.
It's an unusual circumstance.
Most unusual witness. One comes out to mind straight away. I told you about outreach. I work with elderly people as well. Anyone who's vulnerable, determined vulnerable. This lady, she must have been, I think she was near 80, in the early 80s. She obviously had some form of dementia or Alzheimer's. And we all thought, why is she coming to court to give evidence? But it's not our choice. Crown Prosecution wanted her there. Well, she was a joy, really. She kept telling him about her life, and she was a dancer with Bruce Forsyth. I thought, hello, yeah, you watch television. And I used to be in the Palladium, and I did all this. I thought, yeah, so I went along with it. Anyway, the first day, having got her back twice, because she was off now, I've done it now, I'm going. No, you're not, I'm sorry, you're not here. She had a long wait, and they let her go. Second day I went, and she said, look, I brought you. And she got this great big bag out, and there's an album of cuttings. I couldn't believe it. All these photographs and pictures and cuttings. And she was right. There was Bruce Forsyth. There she was in the group dancing behind, because they always had dancers in the old variety days. And she said, that's me there. Look, and that's me. She said, I'll show you how we dance. And with that, she picked me up and we danced round the waiting room. And I thought, if anyone could see me now, they'd think. She said, you're not bad for your age. And you're light on your feet. I said, it's because I'm big and most people are here. Anyway, we went through this bazaar. And then because the usher came in to say, we're ready to do the live link. What are you doing? So she joined in as well. But what was nice afterwards, it was unusual. She went, of course, I don't think she knew what was happening. She went because, unfortunately, like a lot of older people in that situation, she had been conned, well, that was the argument, by some people who visited and said, you need your roof done, or something like that. And they wanted her to be in court to prove that she was vulnerable and she was susceptible. It worked. They all found, a team of them, three, found guilty. Three men have been round and taken thousands out of our fund. You know, you hear about them, don't you? Taken to the bank and all that. Typical case. It was so sad. But I thought, that's why they brought her in. And I had a personal letter from the judge afterwards. I hear you enjoyed your time dancing. Much to our amusement. But thank you very much for entertaining and keeping her. Because they knew that she kept one. I've done it now. I'm off. She kept wanted to go shopping or gardening or something. I said, no, we've got one more thing to do yet. So I distracted her. But she was right, she had danced. So it's the most unusual I've ever dealt with, I think. That's what comes straight to mind. Don't get many of those. Not like that. But she was a joy.
Afterwards.
Sorry?
Any more questions?
They could grab me. I've got a few. If people want, you're very welcome to take. There's leaflets about our service. If you want to pick one up, you're welcome. There's Mr. Blobby, I mentioned. If you've got a DVD and you're bored at home, that's what we use, particularly with young children, to show you what we do. So do pick these up if you wish. You're very welcome. That I can show you, but they're like gold dust. So if you want to just look through it. This, again, is something which we use. It's colourful, it's bright, it's simple, again, for children. Funny enough, sometimes I go and see a teenager and I say, I'm sorry, this is all I've got. So, oh, that's just right for me. Yes, it's simple. It says all these things. It's not all flowery and all that. It's straight to the point. And it's designed for young people, very young people. Even adults love this stuff. So we have a range, if you like. But yes, they can come and have a look and see. Or if you want to ask any questions after I've shut up. That's what you're saying, isn't it? I know what you're saying.
Yes.
I can see the subtitle. Yeah. You're being recorded, by the way.
Yes. Yes.
Speak up.
Yes. And if you're interested, are they too old?
To what? To be a...
Yeah, one of you.
One of me?
Yeah.
Actually, there's no age limit.
Right, well, we've
got one lady who's 88. Yeah, I think what happens is you are not accredited because you don't attend or you don't come or you become ill or you can't because of your bad back or something. Most people age themselves out naturally. Very few are told, apart from those that slip through and make silly mistakes, most people are not asked to go unless they make a mistake. But most people, who I notice, they gradually fall off. They say, I don't think I can do it. I can't get up too early. I've got a bad back, can't do this. So there's no age. You can keep going as long as you're fit and sprightly. You wouldn't think I'm 104.
No, we wouldn't.
No,
you're true.
Thank you. They believe it. It's actually 102.
Can I say it's been very, very enlightening? It's also been very, very good that there's been no projector, no this, no nothing at all. And it's simply you.
I think it worried Nigel.
Well, it wasn't Nigel.
He kept asking me. He said,
poor old Alex who got the stuff out.
I'm sorry.
Said, no, didn't need it. And you walked in and said, where's the projector? And he went, ah, that's. You've captivated us. You've kept our attention. I think I don't think anybody's fallen off to sleep this time.
There's two. They're gone and bright.
Yeah, well, they've gone.
Yeah,
yeah, they left.
Yes.
Very, very interesting. And it's something that most of us don't know anything about. We don't know it's there. We don't know that it's happening.
But it could happen tomorrow to you.
Indeed.
I can tell you that.
Well, yes.
You might just happen. You see something.
Mm. So anyway, thank you very much. It was very, very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.